Welcome everybody to another edition of Unscripted Wrestling. Today we'll be doing a career retrospective of Harley Race. Tonight my hosts are Doug Hummer, Daniel Hummer, and your cousin Kenny. How are you guys?
Good. How about you?
Good.
Good.
We're doing good, Eric.
Can't complain.
Welcome. Glad you guys can come on. And as any of you know, that Harley Race passed away on Friday afternoon at the age of, how old was he?
He was 76.
76 years old. And another great one is gone. So tonight we'll be dedicating this show to him and looking back at his great career. Who wants to start? I didn't really see him wrestle that much, so you guys can enlighten me.
Okay,
take it away,
Kenny.
Doug.
Do you want to start, or do you want me to?
Well, I'll start with this. It's sad as it is that he's dead. It's probably a good thing that he is, because he'd probably kick our asses after playing that song again. That was pretty rough.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that was one of his more fondly remembered entrance music. I'll start it off. I'll just say I first saw Harley Race as a manager. I didn't know. He just looked like a tough old guy. I mean, you know, he got the blonde curly hair and the mustache, and he came out with Vader when I saw him. And even then, you know, you just knew he was a tough guy. And eventually I got to see his work, and I was right. He was a tough guy.
Right.
He just
exactly. And
he just,
I mean,
is
that's
what
like,
he is.
I mean, and that's basically like when I first got to see him too, because you know, around like 91, 92, or when I started like remembering, you know, seeing him and stuff. The first time I think I ever actually saw Harley Race that I remember was as Lex Luger's manager back in 1991.
I don't remember that. I just remember him with Vader, so.
Right. Well, yeah, he was with Luger before he was with – remember when he managed – it was funny. I was watching an episode of Primetime Wrestling the other day. I was watching a match. It was him and Hercules versus the British Bulldogs. And it's funny. He teamed with Hercules, and then years later in WCW, when Hercules was under a mask – Race managed Hercules for a while.
What was he under a mask? What was his gimmick?
There was a Super Invader.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Super Invader was Herc.
Oh, boy. Okay, I guess you won't probably start at the beginning. I mean...
Well, like we'll go like back to the beginning. You know, I was doing some research the other day, and he actually got expelled from high school at the age of 17.
Oh wow!
Wow,
he's badass.
He got into a fight with another classmate, and the principal went to break it up, but he accidentally kneed Race in the head. So Race beat the shit out of the principal.
Oh, well, there you go.
So then
well,
he got Go ahead, Kenny.
You know, I'm just reading a little bit here and trying to remember some stuff that I wrote down. Well, first off, he overcame polio as a child. So that's, like, if you can beat that, that was like, damn, you're pretty tough. I mean, and he was trained by, I guess, the Biscos, no relation to Larry, but it's probably where he got his gimmick from. And he
right.
Just the best. Right, and, you know, he started in the 60s, so, I mean, he's been there for a long time as a wrestler.
Right, I mean, over a 30-year career.
Yeah. You know, as far as, like, the first thing he did that was big was he teamed with Mr. Perfect's father, Larry the Axe Henning.
Larry the Axe Henning?
Yeah, which is funny because... We don't think of him as this, but they were originally, pretty boy heels, which is funny because when you think of him now, like, you know what, like, all you can think of is, you know, Grizzled Harley Race, and my God, Kurt Hennig's father looked like a bear of some sort.
Right. I mean, and, you know, that was in the AWA, and the AWA was filled with, you know, the tough shooter wrestlers. And, you know, you weren't going to get any tougher than Henning and Race, even though they were pretty boys.
And, you know, it's how would I say this? You know, they were called the, because they were blonde hair, they were called the Dolly Sisters by the fans of the derogatory nickname, something about blonde hair in the days, I guess.
Right. Hey, Eric, did Daniel call?
Oh, he's going to call.
Yeah. He should be calling at the, he's
yeah.
Calling on his phone. Dude.
Who's this? Daniel?
Stan, I'm in.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, no, as far, like with Race, and then, you know, I think it was Kenny, was it 64 or 65 he was in the car accident?
Oh, geez, let me think. I didn't write that down.
Hold on. I think it was at the age of 17.
Just a couple of years into the career, he was in an accident, but he overcame that, and I think he was back in the ring by 64 or 65.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he almost had the leg amputated.
Ooh.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's pre-1963, I know that, somewhere between 60 and 63.
Right. But, you know, like you were saying, though, too, a pretty boy heel really does not, even though Harley Race was known as, you know, Handsome Harley Race throughout the majority of his career, like, he was probably the toughest pretty boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Daniel, let me ask you this. Like, I know, obviously, you know, you're younger than the rest of us, but... When was the first time you remember seeing Harley Race?
My first time seeing Harley Race was about 8 years ago, looking up Ric Flair matches on YouTube. And I remember seeing Flair for the gold with him versus Harley Race. And I saw Harley's promos going up to that, and I saw the match itself. And all I think of is what a badass Harley Race was. It made me totally forget about Ric Flair at the time.
Right.
Just what a tough son of a bitch this guy was, and how I legit thought that he could destroy Ric Flair, even though as a kid, you know, I thought Ric Flair was the end-all, be-all. Still do, but Harley Race kind of paved the way for him, especially there. And match still goes down as a classic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you started at a great point, man. I mean, that's pretty much where you want to start.
Yeah.
Right. And here's the thing, though, too, is that Harley also, even though there were some things Harley Race did not want to do, if he thought it was best for business, he was still going to do it.
Yes, it's called being professional.
Right. Well, because I think at one point, like, nobody thought he was actually going to show up to Starrcade and drop the title to Flair. At least that's what Flair was telling people.
Well, you know, everybody's got their own version of this stuff, but we know what happened.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he won. Now, the one thing I kind of want to talk about, well, first of all, we do have to point out that Harley Race was the first ever United States champion.
Yes.
When the title was started in 1975, Harley Race was the first person to win it.
The NWA? No, not that one.
The NWA, when it was started in the Mid-Atlantic.
Okay.
So he was the first person to win it. Obviously, you know, he would win the NWA world title not that long after. He won it 8 times. And there were some guys the majority of times when he dropped the title, he would regain it right back. And one of the guys he dropped the title to was Wildfire Tommy Rich. And that was something, like, I think I heard the story that Harley didn't even know what was happening.
I believe that.
Is that, I think, yeah, it was, I can't remember who the, because it happened in Georgia, I think, right, Kenny?
I cannot confirm that.
I think it happened in Georgia, and back in 1981, you know, Tommy Rich was considered one of the top baby faces in the country.
Which is amazing. Looking back at that guy, I don't see what anybody saw in him. No disrespect, but like, I wouldn't even pay in money to watch him. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, the memories I have of the guy are not as this, you know, top babyface, you know, world champion. My memories of this guy are him as a member of not only the York Foundation, but also the FBI.
I would say you better say the FBI, because that might be his true crowning achievement.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah, oh, I got it. I found it. It says right here. He beat Harley Race. For 4 days, he was champion. And then he dropped the title back to Harley Race.
Okay. Yeah, so basically, like, either they just wanted a fluke title change, or somebody finally realized, oh, yeah, this guy is not going to get the belt over.
Well, I've heard other stories, too, if you want to breach that subject.
Yeah, well, what did you hear?
Well, let's just say there was a certain promoter, a well-known promoter.
Barnett?
Jim Barnett. And Mr. Rich may or may not have done some favors for Mr. Barnett.
Okay,
and,
I remember hearing that. I think Michael Hayes told that story.
There's a dubious source if I've ever heard one, but it certainly makes a lot of sense because, you know, now forever, for the history of forever, Tommy Rich will be one-time NWA champion no matter what happens. So,
right.
Hey.
What kind of favors, Kenny?
Kenny, this is an unscripted show. So.
I think we all know what we're talking about here. We don't have to say. But let's just
Rich
say it's
wouldn't swallow the sword?
Something like that. You can, fill in your own imagination. You can find it if you want to look for it. I'm just saying there was something weird going on. But let's get back to Harley Race. Speaking of champion, first time he won the... Let's talk about the first win, right? I mean, that's where we got to start.
Right, yeah, the first title win. The first world title win was against Dory Funk Jr., I believe, correct?
Yes. After, let's see, 1,563 days of holding the title. So that's like what?
Good Lord.
5 years? Little 5 years and change? Something like that?
Yeah.
And Harley Race beats him.
Right. I mean, and Harley, he made quite the name for himself in the Funk's Amarillo territory, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, he had the respect for the Funk's. The Funk's had the respect for him. Now, I believe, and this is kind of backtracking a little bit, but I believe that Race was the opponent when Ted DiBiase's father, Iron Mike DiBiase, died in the ring, right?
I'm not sure.
I remember hearing something like that or reading something about it. Pretty sure it was Harley Race.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, which is, you know, heck of a way to get yourself over the heel if you kill a guy in a wrestling match, quote unquote.
I heard he was pretty stiff, but holy shit.
Yeah, right. Like, he killed the guy. Like, yeah, that's... There's, on one hand, it's like, boy, that's terrible. But on the other hand, if you're a heel and at that time, man, that'll take you, your career will take off for sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, no. If you do it today, you know, then you're criticized, you know, on Twitter.
Forget about that. First of all, you'd have to convince people that the singer was actually dead. That would be the biggest hurdle. Because hell, I mean, how many people thought Roman Reigns didn't have cancer?
Right.
Exactly. So like, you'd have to convince somebody that they someone actually died. But that's neither here nor there.
Right.
So obviously, you know, it's interesting that his first win is basically the transitional champion. Because Dory Funk Sr. didn't want his son to lose to another face. And it was one of the Briscoes. And so they're like, okay, we'll do this change. And, you know, there was even talk of, you know, Race having to shoot on Terry or Dory Jr. because he might not drop the title, and he was a legitimate wrestler too. And there was no need to shoot or anything, but if there was a shoot and somebody could do it, it probably was Harley Race.
But that's interesting too. And like Harley again, if anybody ever want, I find it funny sometimes too, like hearing these stories about like, oh, you know, Harley, you know, people want Harley to do this, people want Harley to do that. And if Harley did not want to do something, you were not, because he was a legitimate shooter, he's a legitimate wrestler and a tough guy, you were not going to get him to do anything.
Right. I don't mean to, you know, split hairs here, but let's be clear about this. He was a legitimate tough guy in a street fight. He was not a shooter, however. He was not a guy like Dory Funk. He was had no amateur credentials, but he was a guy who, like, you know, he'd bust your head in a bar fight like that.
Yeah. One of the original brawlers, I would say, Harley Race. I would definitely label him brawler category.
Absolutely.
Right. And now, like, you know, there was another, you know, we talk about transitional title reigns. You know, Harley, when he won the title, you know, for the second time, I believe it was when he beat Terry. He was basically champion almost for like three or four years. But there was the interruption of title reigns in between, like little short, like 4 or 5 day reigns. Obviously the one to Tommy Rich, and then there was a couple of them, I believe, to Giant Baba in Japan.
Right. Do they count those?
Yeah.
It's on Wikipedia.
Well, yeah, but you know how wrestling is.
Yeah.
I mean, technically they don't. Just like Inoki's technically not WWF World Champion. Technically, it doesn't count.
So,
but, I mean,
so
they count the losses to Dusty.
Oh, yes, they actually, I'm looking right now at the titles, and they do count Giant Baba's win as being legitimate, even though it was much like Tommy Rich's, only a 7-day run.
Right.
Okay.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Baba really didn't want to leave Japan.
Let's also clarify that there was no favors done by the Giant for anyone.
Oh, yeah, no.
Because that's the last thing I need is some Japanese wrestler to show up at my house and kick my ass.
Anyway. But, yeah, and then, obviously, you know, his feud with Dusty, I think, was, you know, it's a legendary feud. I think the majority of the matches took place in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was the hot territory at the time, right? I mean,
yeah.
Everybody, you know, there are places everywhere, and, you know, but, like, that was the flagship NWA territory, if you will, at the time.
Right, exactly. I mean, that was even bigger, I think, than the Carolinas at that time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, you know, the feud with Dusty, and then obviously the feud with Flair where he passed the torch to Flair. I don't know. I would still say, though, that I think Dusty is probably was probably Harley's greatest opponent.
Oh, yeah. Any nowadays fans who says old school wrestling is boring, I tell them to try to find a Harley Race versus Dusty match, and it's the most entertaining piece of art you'll ever see.
I think it's interesting. It's kind of, you know, I don't know if I disagree with that statement, but I think the thing is with Dusty, I think there's, for my taste, there's not enough contrast, right? I mean, you know, like, yeah, Harley Race is in better shape and stuff, but, like, they're still, like, they're kind of, like, basically, no disrespect is meant by this, but they're, like, you know, the tough guy at a bar who, like, doesn't look in shape, but, you know, he punches you and it's like you got hit by a truck, kind of, on both their parts, so I don't know if I totally agree that Dusty was his greatest nemesis, or if he really had a greatest nemesis. I think maybe that might have been one of his underlying strengths, is he could make you believe anybody he was wrestling was his greatest nemesis.
Right.
I mean, I mean, I remember Mick Foley talks about in the first book, Have a Nice Day, about how the greatest promo he ever heard for a heel was Harley Race, and basically it broke it down like it didn't matter where he was. He'd come in, you know, he'd say, you know, he'd pump up the guy he was facing, and just after, you know, he said, I'm gonna, you know, this is guy's great, he's great. And then he'd say, wrap it up with something like, but tonight I was just that little bit better, and like, just a little bit better than, you know, whoever the local hero was tonight. And it was just like it killed, because like here you are, you're pumping up the guy, and then you're like, but tonight I was the better man, just a little bit better. And it's like totally getting over your opponent, but just tweaking it just a little so you still come off as a total arrogant prick.
Right. And here's the thing, too, like, also in the early 80s, you know, after he had dropped the title to Dusty, before he got it back from Flair, he went to World Class, and I believe he actually helped get over, I think either Kerry Von Erich, David Von Erich, or both.
I know he's had matches with Kerry.
Yeah, Geez, I'm not. I don't think I know much about that. As far as who he got over, but he definitely. I'm sure he definitely went down there and helped those guys. I mean, he pretty much was always doing that kind of thing, you know, taking, making people look good, and basically that's why he was a champion. He's like, he's a legit, you know, exactly what they wanted at that in wrestling. Legit guy, but he does business without being a dick too much. So,
right.
I mean, what more could you ask for? I think one of the things that I learned, I didn't know until I saw this, is all, you know, because this is something nobody talks about, but the whole title versus title thing between him and Billy Graham and Bob Backlund, like, that must have been something. And
it,
and Nick Bockwinkel as well.
Yeah. Now, I remember it was on WWE Network for a while. It was underneath the Hidden Gems, but because of this network 2.0 bullshit, the match has disappeared for right now. But they did have a match between Backlund and Race on the network. It was champion versus champion, and it went almost an hour.
Oh, it's not on the network anymore?
As far as I know, it's not. I mean, you might, somebody might have to research it, but I don't think it is.
That's just amazing.
But it was...
Those matches were pretty big pieces of business too, right? They drew pretty well, the champion versus champion thing. I know
that. Oh,
yeah.
That was
yeah, I mean, I mean, they drew, but it, I mean, you really have to. I mean, what are you gonna do? I mean, are you gonna have somebody, another champion, win your belt? I mean, you know, in the territories at that time, you really couldn't have somebody else's champion carry your title.
Well, right, but don't forget at the time that, you know, people still believed Doug. So it didn't matter.
Yeah, it was
real
back then. Yeah.
Right.
Every booker in the country knew it was going to be it was going to go to a draw. But that didn't matter to the fans. They actually thought someone was going to come out on top.
Right.
Go
ahead, Kenny.
You know, this is really a technical booking thing, but when you think about it, this is a chance for, you know, here's a chance for to really blur the line, because now, you know, you got two guys and him and Billy Graham. It's like, you know, you got two heels basically wrestling. So the fans are like, okay, well, these guys, we don't really like both these guys, either guy, but we're going to, you know, but we're going to watch this match. And I would assume, you know, wherever the match happened, that Graham, you know, the local crowd would take to their guy. So if it was up north, Graham would probably be the face nominally, and the, you know, down in the middle of the country there would have been Harley Race. So it really was a way to blur the lines about what was real and what wasn't for the time.
Oh yeah. And it only benefits both organizations too, in a booker's standpoint, because it makes people want to see both products now.
Now, I remember Bob Backlund telling a story on Jim Ross's old Ross Report podcast a couple of years ago about his match with Harley Race, and he basically said, because it was in NWA territory, and Vince had called Backlund and said, hey, put him over, but get disqualified. So he's going to go over, but it's going to be a disqualification. And tell Barnett that I said it's okay for you, for Race to go over, but it's got to be a DQ. And but Excellent went to Barnett and said, hey, look, I got permission to lose, but I got to do it by DQ. I think they had more. Did they have more than one match? I think they did, didn't they?
There was probably several. I'm sure they got him for, you know, a set amount of time, and they did as many matches as they could in that amount of time.
Yeah.
You know.
So one of them was definitely him going over, and then when they wanted, because I think Barnett even tried to get Vince to let Backlund put Race over, and Vince is like, I ain't going to do that, even if it's in your territory.
You know, that's the business. The business is the business, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's not, I mean, obviously, you know, it's, you know, it wouldn't be good for Vince's business or for Vince Sr.'s business for that to happen. So I get that. But no, like the match that was on the network, like I said, I think it was a 60-minute draw, and that match was phenomenal. And there's no commentary either.
There you go. Wow.
But I thought the match was great.
Yeah, I can't find any network.
That is.
You looked, Eric?
Yeah.
All right. Now, you know, he loses. You know, obviously he does the job for Flair at Starrcade 83.
Well, before we go there, let's talk about just going back to the amount of respect this guy had in the business. 78, he body slams Andre the Giant.
Oh yeah, I did. I remember reading that too.
I mean, that is like, you know, this was not Andre of the one that everybody remembers in the WWF. This is Andre where he could do stuff like, you know, this was Andre dropping elbows off the second rope on the guys, and you know, and he wasn't going to, if he didn't want to sell, he wasn't going to sell. And so to go up, let Harley body slam him, that just shows you, like, again, the legitimacy of this man and the respect he got from it.
Right. And, I mean, obviously there were other guys, and, you know, and I'm not talking Warrior, I'm not talking Hogan, that were able to body slam Andre. You know, Stan Hansen, I think, has a couple of body slams on Andre.
Stan, and because of the their connection being both Frenchmen, Rugged Ronnie Garvin.
Rugged Ronnie Garvin?
Yes. Because Rugged Ronnie was French-Canadian, Andre was French, and, you know, French people do things for the French people that they won't do for other people.
We might have to try to find it. Is there a video of it on YouTube?
I don't think so. And I want to say, I think I heard this story. I think it might have been Jim Cornette told the story. In one of his shoot interviews, because he was talking about, you know, just like, you know, Rugged Ronnie Garvin, like, basically stretching Road Warrior Hawk at the time. And this was one of the stories he told with it. I think it might have been Cornette, but I'm not positive.
All right. Well, I'll have to try to see if I could look that up. I'm not sure, or at least if I could look up somebody talking about it.
So at this point in the story, Race has been six times. He's been the champion already.
Right.
As he's going into the deal with Flair, and I think now this has to be talked about as this was like the first big angle, right, for the NWA / WCW, that proto WCW as we would come to know it, basically, because
right.
This is heading into Starrcade. I'll mention this. You know, this is Race offering $25,000 to anyone who could eliminate Ric Flair, and a good friend of mine and a wrestler by the name of Bud Good, he has a shirt. And it's got a drawing of Harley Race on it with the briefcase, and it says, "Somebody take the money." And, like, that sticks in my head. Now when I think Harley Race, all I can hear is him going, "Please, somebody take the money," which is his grizzled voice. And, like, that is just a brilliant, like, concept.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It makes somebody look like
really,
such a scumbag. Right, like, here's a guy we know he can fight, he can beat guys up, but no, he's not gonna. He's gonna pay anybody else $25,000 to beat up his opponent, something he could easily do, right? In theory.
Right. Well,
no, he's invested to dirty himself.
Right. Because, you know, he is the champion or whatever, you know, at that time. And that's obviously, that gets you more heel heat. And heel heat was what he wanted back then.
And that's what you want now. He sells tickets.
And it got Ric Flair over like $1 million.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, watching it now, it's weird because, you know, we only, wrestling fans of our age and younger, only knew Bob Orton and Dick Slater as bad guys. Back then, they were good guys. You know, they were heat faces. So when they turned on Flair, it was a big deal. But, you know,
yeah,
we only knew them as bad guys. You know, we knew him as Ace and hell, Dirty Dick Slater. I mean, I've seen him wrestle probably more than almost anybody in the world. All the times at WCW Saturday Night, him and Bunkhouse Buck.
Anybody that goes back and sees, you know, stuff like that, you know, when they were, you know, when they were baby faces, because again, until I saw something on like Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, I never, ever remembered either one of those guys being a baby face.
Because they weren't when we were watching. Bob Orton, yeah. The earliest we would have saw Orton was he was with Piper's Ace. And Dick Slater was always Dirty Dick Slater. There was no other thing to see. And another thing that sticks out my head is when this happened, you know, they I can't remember exactly how they did it, but, you know, Flair with the neck injury, I can remember, I can hear it in my head, Ric Flair screaming, like, about his neck. It's like, even knowing that it was, you know, work, it was horrifying.
Right. I remember seeing that too. And Flair is a great actor.
Well, yeah.
But yeah. Even knowing it, you still get like this. It's still disturbing hearing him scream, half cry, I guess you'd say.
Right.
And you know it led into this, you know, the match. One of the most brilliant like uses of a double meeting in wrestling, a Flair for the gold, right? I mean,
definitely the best build up, if not in top 10 best build ups.
Just by words, right? You don't even have to know anything else. If I told you, here's the match card, it's called a Flair for the Gold. It's like, that's all you need to know. That here, Ric Flair is going to be, try to become the man.
Right.
I mean, that defined his legacy right there. And it was. A lot of it was thanks to Harley Race.
Right.
Perfect psychology.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, you know, we think of, you know, Ric Flair as, you know, dirtiest player in the game and all that. But back then, like, you really had, like, I guess what you would kind of call the new versus the old. You had Harley Race, who was, like, the old tough guy. He had the wrestler's kind of body where he was muscular, but he wasn't, like, you know, some kind of roided out freak. Where then you had Flair, with the athlete, you know, Flair was, again, he looked athletic, but he wasn't, you know, ridiculous looking, but he was an athlete compared to Harley Race. And you really got this dichotomy of these two guys who are like nothing alike at all.
No.
And, you know, really going back to the money thing, like it really was driven home that like Harley Race sees this punk kid, you know, coming into his world and trying to take his belt. And they, you know, they bring in back Gene Kaninsky, who was like, you know, he was old when he was young and he's older now. And they, you know, they put him in a cage. And then actually Flair actually hits a top rope move for once in his life and wins the damn title.
Right, yeah, that top rope crossbody, which I don't think he's ever hit again.
Maybe once.
Yeah. But, you know, that, and Eric, let me ask you, Eric, I don't mean to wake you up, but have you ever seen any of that match from Starrcade '83?
No.
Must watch. It's a must watch.
Yeah. It's a must watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that, obviously, you know, none of us were around back then.
No.
But, and I know you didn't start technically watching wrestling until the mid-90s.
Yeah.
It's a great match. One of the things that's impressive about it is just like, you know, it was kind of the first time like a big audience got to see Flair doing the Ric Flair entrance, right? This wasn't just, you know, Harley Race came out with his whatever the hell that was, that Minuteman coat or whatever he was wearing at the time. That blue, white and white job, like, I don't know what that was supposed to be. It had tails that looked like, you know, he beat up a ringmaster at a circus and took his coat. But but then, you know, here comes Flair with, he's got the first, like, Flair robe, the green with the diamonds, and they're playing, you know, Thus Spoke Zarathustra, and it was just like, it's Flair, you know. And so, yeah, it's the atmosphere of the match, if nothing else, is just beyond amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And another thing about that match is all we hear about when we talk about Ric Flair is he's a guy that can get anybody over, right? Make anybody look good. That is what we associate with Ric Flair. But then you go back then, and you see Harley Race kind of doing that for him, passing the torch,
wow,
making him look great at every turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just the psychology of that match was perfect.
Right.
You know,
and it shows, you know, obviously the respect that Race not only had for the business, but for Flair. And, you know, when he was told to do that, obviously he was a consummate professional, but there were a few times that, you know, he did not want to do that, and I'll get to that in a little bit.
Well, you might as well talk about it now, man, because the next, this is kind of the end of him in the NWA, so.
All right, well,
it was. I never heard about this.
Okay, 1980, I think it was the beginning of 1986, they brought him in to put Magnum over for a one-off.
Well, 86 is when he starts in, whatchamacallit.
Well, this was in the beginning of 86, so this was a couple months before. Yeah, so this is the beginning of 86. He was, they had brought him in, and he thought he was going to work a long-term program with Magnum. And they told him, I don't know who told him, but somebody told him, was like, no, you're just going to put him over for a one-off. And he said, oh, okay, no, I'm not. And then he lost by DQ, and then that was his last appearance with Crockett.
Okay.
Wow.
That I can see, like, I can see the sense of that, though. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, this now everything has changed, right? Because now there is no, you got Flair is becoming, you know, evil Ric Flair, kind of, slowly. And,
right, the Horseman War thing.
Yes. So you got Ric Flair's already, you know, bad guy Ric Flair, and it would have made more sense to do a program to build Magnum is like, okay, here's the guy who had Flair's number a couple times. You know, Flair beat him in the end, but he had Flair's number a couple times. So if he can beat this guy, then he's got to have a chance against Ric Flair. And, you know, which is, I think, certainly Magnum, it's an interesting thing. You think you got another guy who, like, in sort of like a kind of a mirror of Harley Race, and that he's, you know, he just looks like a guy who looks legitimate, right? Like, he could have, you know, if you ever, like, were in a place and you wouldn't, like, piss this guy off, he just, you know, take your head off, right? And,
exactly.
You know, the look and everything. And so, in a lot of ways, he was kind of like a Harley racist character.
Yeah.
And would have been brilliant to have done a program with him, certainly. And I can understand not wanting to just do one job to the guy, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, where I heard the story from was the Rock and Roll Express were doing a timeline for kayfabe commentaries, and they were asked about that. And Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson didn't say anything, you know, obviously.
Of course
not. He just kind
of
stood there. Yeah, he just stood there with his arms crossed. But Ricky Morton
looking
said,
off, kind of off to one side.
Yeah. Ricky Morton just looked at Sean Oliver and said, "You really think they were going to make Harley do anything?"
No.
And and he goes, and Sean Oliver goes, "I guess not." He goes, "You couldn't, if Harley didn't want to do it, you were not going to force him."
No.
Yeah.
So
and,
not surprised.
Go ahead, Kenny.
No, I'm just saying not surprised. I just.
But, well then, I mean, in defense of Harley, if you fast forward, and this fast forward a while, but same thing in 2002, you got a superstar, Steve Austin, and then you got a young up-and-coming kid, Brock Lesnar, and you should get a long program out of it and make it mean something, but they want Austin to job to Lesnar on Raw. Austin says, F you, same thing, you know? It's Harley F and Race. It should be a big deal when he loses to Magnum and make Magnum mean something. That's probably where he was thinking at the time.
Right.
You know, and you can say it's one thing for, like, some, you know, schmo, just like he's got, like, 20 matches under his belt to come in and balk the idea. It's something totally different, you know, 7-time, 8-time NWA champion, or I think it's 7, right?
Seven recognized.
Says, you know, I'm not going to do a job to guy. It's a little different scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
Now after he leaves here, because obviously it was a disagreement with management, he didn't get along with Sam Munchnick or Bob Geigel or whoever. As a matter of fact, I actually think he hated both.
Well, it's funny, you know, like, I know Geigel was actually a worker at one time. I don't know about Mushnick, but it's just funny, like, you know, how far back in wrestling that trope of the fake president authority figure goes. Like, they were doing that they're like, yeah, just bring out some old wrestling guy and make him the manager. Like, and Bob Geigel looks like, no disrespect, I didn't know the man, never saw him wrestle, but he looks like such a goober.
Right.
Bald as an egg, he's got these glasses the same shape as his head. And, you know, it's like you're supposed to trust this guy as an authority figure. And maybe if you've seen him wrestle as a kid, you might. But, like, the rest of the country's like, who is this goober?
Right. Now, after Race had the falling out with the NWA and Crockett, he did go to AWA to work the Wrestle Rock show in April of 86. And he beat Rick Martel by DQ.
Well, Rick Martel losing to Harley Race, huh? That doesn't make sense. Was Martel the champ at the time?
No, he had already lost it to Stan Hansen.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that would have been a hell of a match. Did that ever happen, Doug, Hanson and Race?
I don't think it ever did.
There have been a lot of potatoes served that night, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That would have been a hell of a brawl, I give you that.
Yeah, it may have happened in Japan, I'm not sure.
Which match?
Harley Race and Stan Hansen.
Okay.
They've been opposed to each other, but I believe in a tag team match on opposite teams.
Yeah, that's usually the case. And that was probably in Japan, then.
Right. Not a one-on-one match. I believe it was a tag team match.
That would have been something, though. So he grabs back to the AWA, right, briefly.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then he goes, so now he comes to the WWF. And again,
right.
You know, it's the same theme here. He's so respected that, you know, Vince basically either creates or halfway creates the concept of King of the Ring for Harley Race. To acknowledge, like,
well,
you know.
They had the tournament once. Morocco won it. It was just a house show gimmick. And
right.
Morocco won it in 85, and then it was going to be in 86. They actually had Harley Race win it, and then that's when I guess Vince or may have even been George Scott, because I think George Scott was the booker at that point, had even said, he goes, you know what? We might have something here. So let's just call him the king.
Right, because it wasn't like because of the title versus title matches, he's got a you know these people in New York know him, so they have to do something. They can't just pretend he's nobody.
Right.
So they come up with we'll call him the king and acknowledge that he was, you know, which is funny little side note here. Guy we think of as a total company man now, but Jerry Lawler did threaten legal action against them at the time.
Right.
Which is funny because
I remember that.
Think of Lawler as like the ultimate like company guy, right?
Right. But yeah, I mean, and he did, Race did beat he beat Pedro Morales in the final of that tournament.
Yeah.
And
right.
Wasn't the first one though, right?
No, it was the second one.
Thought Morocco would be the first one.
Right.
Yes.
But Morocco basically already had a gimmick.
Yeah.
And you know, so basically they were looking at something to kind of, you know, they were looking at making a name for Race, so they're like, you know, we'll just call him the king, and every once in a while he'll put the crown on the line.
Here they go, and they get, and here's something they did, and I think, you know, maybe unique among wrestlers and managers is they gave Harley Race Bobby Heenan, you know, somebody he knew for a long time. But what's interesting is we often associate managers only being with wrestlers who can't cut promos, where Bobby Heenan almost seemed to specialize in managing wrestlers who could talk.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Like you get, you know, he managed, you know, famously Nick Bockwinkel and Ray Stevens. And like nobody needed to cut a promo for Nick Bockwinkel, but it was, Bobby Heenan added something, could adjust to any situation they needed him to be in as a manager.
Right.
And,
I mean,
you know, and
he was perfect.
Both the bleach blonde hair, him and Race, you know, and, you know, Race is the king.
Yeah,
and
Race is the king.
Just Bobby doing Bobby stuff. It was like just total heat. You couldn't beat it.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is that, like, Race, you know, Race was over as a heel, obviously. You know, he basically was a career heel. And, you know, he got over. Eric, why am I echoing?
I don't know. Are you echoing?
A little bit,
sounds
I think.
Like I am.
Yeah, just a little bit.
All right. So, but with Race, and I think one of the more notable feuds that Race had while he was in the WWF was against Junkyard Dog in the match at WrestleMania 3.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the biggest show of that time for the E. And JYD wasn't, Mid-South JYD, but he was still so over, it wasn't even funny.
Right. I mean, he was very much over. It was, I mean, the match wasn't great, but it was one of the main attractions.
Yeah, it was, you know, like I said, you know, that, you know, JYD was never no, you know, skilled grappler or long, you know, stamina guy, but he just like a man with just more charisma than any human being should be allowed, and that's all you needed, really.
Yeah, top five most over people in the business, definitely.
Oh, easily.
Right. And what was funny about WrestleMania 3, I only watched WrestleMania 3 for the first time like 12 years ago. And I just remember that pay-per-view. Right. Well, because I got it on the WrestleMania Anthology DVD set.
Well,
I got it on the
VHS, and those, like, there were a couple you could always lay your hands on, but that one, and for some reason, WrestleMania 7 were just brutal to get a hold of.
Right. And, but, like, WrestleMania 3, you know, at that time, not all the WrestleMania matches had to have a story.
I mean, kind of like now.
Right. But like now, because at WrestleMania 3, there were 12 matches. I remember like maybe six or seven of them having like an actual like storyline heading into it. And Junkyard Dog and Race was one of them because they had had problems stemming from the beginning of that year.
Yeah,
and
that was just,
you know,
like...
And
yeah,
it was
just,
you know,
a great build.
Yeah, it was a great build. The match might not have been great, but, you know, Race got the win, and then obviously Junkyard Dog, he was the last man standing after. Because,
uh-huh.
You know, you weren't going to put the cape and the crown on the dog, because dog didn't need it.
No.
So,
was that Race's
first?
What? Was that Race's first Mania?
Yeah, that was Harley Race's first WrestleMania.
First and only, right? Was he at 4?
He was at 4. He was in the Battle Royal.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, he was in the Battle Royal. He had to be in the Battle Royal. Like, they wanted him in something. But he had that hernia at the time because, remember, he got injured in the match with Hogan.
Right. Which is, again, another sign of respect in the business because guess what? Hogan was selling for Harley Race.
Right. And because, remember, it's a very famous spot of Race goes to splash Hogan on a table. Hogan moves. Race goes belly first onto the table, and the sharp edge of the table caught Race in the gut so much that it developed a hernia.
Which, again, another thing about toughness, like, the only man who could injure Harley Race was Harley Race.
Right.
Isn't that right? Like, that's how tough he was. He's like, no man alive could hurt Harley Race but Harley Race.
Right. I mean, and he did the Battle Royal WrestleMania 4. And he really didn't do much in the Battle Royal except for he got headbutted by Junkyard Dog and eliminated. And then afterwards he was gone for a few months. And then Bobby Heenan ended up giving the crown to Haku.
Right. Which
and
talk about like him versus Haku. It's like if they would have been a legitimate fight, they might still be fighting now, for all we know.
You've seen that match, right, Kenny?
Probably. I can't remember it.
All right. I've seen that match a couple of times, and that match actually is enjoyable. Like, nobody gave a shit about that match because they were both heels, you know, back at that time, so... There was really, like, no reaction, but those two guys were beating the shit out of each other.
Yes, the two guys who like fighting. So, of course, so they're just going to go out there and just, you know, almost shoot on, you know, work a shoot, basically. And they're just going to open up on each other because they enjoy fighting. And that's what they did. So it's a tremendous, like beating of a fight, you know?
Right. And I've never, you know, and Haku, like, that was early glimpses of how good Haku could be in the ring.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that was the thing, like, you, another guy, you know, total legitimacy, Like, you looked at that guy, and that was a scary dude. Like, you know, he did, he looked like, you know, like a shaved werewolf or something. Like, he just, just a scary-looking dude. And because he was a scary-looking, he was a scary dude.
Right. And there was a one spot in the match, and Daniel, you've seen this before, right?
Yes. A couple times.
Right. Eric, have you seen this match before?
What was the match again?
Haku, or King Haku versus Harley Race. It was from the 1989 Royal Rumble.
No, I haven't. Not yet.
All right. Next time you're with me, I'm going to make you watch it. Okay.
We'll do a watch along.
We can do that too. This match was so, it was such an ugly match, but it was so enjoyable. And one of my fondest memories of this match was when Harley Race did the diving headbutt he's so famous for. But when you do the diving headbutt, you're supposed to hit the other guy in the head.
Mm-hmm. You missed.
And it's just like Race realized when he went down and headbutted Haku, he's like, I should not have done that. Because he knocked the shit out of himself.
I was just saying, yeah, are you crazy? Samoan. If there's one thing you can learn from wrestling is you can't hit a Samoan guy in the head and win.
Right. And it's just like, you know, all the moves he was doing to him would have knocked a normal guy. Like, he hit him with two pile drivers, for Christ's sake.
Well, again, Samoans and heads, they just like, it's like seeing your own blood for some people. You hit them in the head and they just lose it.
Right. Exactly. But that match, you know, enjoyable. It's probably underrated. You know, one of my favorite underrated matches. What wasn't pretty, was not a classic match, but it was so enjoyable because you got to see two guys beat the shit out of each other.
And that was right before the Rumble, too. That was pretty much the main event right before the Rumble.
Right, and you know what sucks is on the original Rumble video cassette, which I rented from Blockbuster like almost 20 years ago, it wasn't even included on the original VHS. Because by the time they released the video, Race was already gone.
All right, yeah. So speaking of gone, right, so it's 1988 or 89. He's leaving the WWE, has a cup of coffee in Puerto Rico, and he's pretty much wrestling until about 1991 as an active competitor.
Right. He had a match on AWA TV, you know, when they were wrestling in front of five people against Larry Zbyszko for the AWA title.
That's such a tragedy because, like, there are two guys who get, like, constantly lost in the shuffle of discussion of great heels, and it was kind of the same time and the same thing happened. You know, Larry Zbyszko was great at the time, but nobody saw him because just, like, the AWA was just going down the tubes. And the same kind of thing happened to Ravishing Rick Rude, man. Ravishing Rick Rude, the best he was as a heel, you know, the whole Dangerous Lions deal, the whole thing. Nobody saw that.
Yeah.
Right.
They just know him from the WWF stint.
Right.
Yeah.
And
so,
I mean, and it's like that match between Race and Zbyszko was actually, I've seen it once. Eric, you got to fix the echo. But
I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah.
I guess it's just the phone.
Okay. Well, might be. The Race Zbyszko match from the AWA taping in 1990 was actually really good. They went like 18 to 20 minutes. And it was just it was just a classic wrestling match.
Yeah. So, you know, it's 1991 now. He has his last real match, I guess. One of the last matches he had, it was wrestling, you know, the great Mike Rotundo, Michael Wall Street, IRS, whatever you want to call him. And shortly thereafter, he sustained a shoulder injury. Tires. for 6 months,
right,
as a and then he comes back as a guest referee. Then he comes back again. They put him with Lex. Who?
Right, and that's. Go ahead, Kenny.
And just note, Lex Luger, home for me and Doug and Daniel, a hometown boy, a good old Lawrence Full from Orchard Park, New York. A guy who I think, you know, in retrospect, gets too much shit that he really doesn't deserve.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree.
That,
underrated.
Know, part of that underrated, and part of it was his attitude towards the business. You know, he wasn't a super fan or a fan as a kid, but he came in. But, you know, Harry Masuda trained him, so then that guy was not, you know, that was the guy who broke Hogan's leg on the first day of Hogan's career training. So it wasn't like, you know, it was a picnic for anybody who was trained by Masuda.
Right, and I'll say this about Lex Luger, because I've actually met the guy. You know, very obviously now very humble. I met him like 3 years ago. Very humble, very proud of where he comes from. He's very proud to tell people that he grew up in Buffalo.
I'm glad. You know, and again, you know, nice guy, and I hope his health is doing good, because I think, like, you know, I mean, you can say a lot of criticism about him, but, man, he was the total package. He's like, looked phenomenal. He could do he was good enough in the ring to go with pretty much anybody. And just, you know, and then, like, boom, here's the perfect guy to teach you how to be a heel. And this is when he kind of got the idea of how to work on the mic, was basically when watching Harley Race.
Right.
You know, this is the whole thing with him and Ron Simmons, right?
Right.
Yep.
I have a question.
Which that match? Or go ahead.
Is Lex in the Hall of Fame?
Not yet.
Not yet, but okay. I would hope soon.
I would hope so soon too.
Yeah, maybe next year, because certainly he's a guy like, you know, obviously everybody was big on him. Obviously, I mean, he was, for all intents and purposes, he was going to be the next Hulk Hogan, but just, you know, the fans just didn't take to it.
And that's because he's better as a heel.
Well, yeah.
The WWF fans didn't take that. The NWA/WCW fans were fine with that. He was very over coming from the Horseman deal, turning on Slayer. It's probably the most over he's ever been.
Right, he was over in WCW.
Yeah, he was totally. So I think what's kind of interesting now is this is kind of the time we started to first see the man, Harley Race. This is the first time we were cognizant of there was this guy who was an old wrestler named Harley Race, and he was managing Vader. Like, holy crap. Like, you know.
And how good was Vader under Harley?
Oh,
great, because, like, you know, Vader, no, Harley Race was not a small guy, you know, by any means, but he was, like, next to Vader, though, Vader dwarfed him, and he's, like, he's in, like, these kind of, like, I wouldn't say crappy suits, but they're not, you know, they're not, like, no horseman suits, but he's in these suits, and he looks like just this old guy who just is like, he's totally in control of this monster, and he's gonna tell the monster to go in there and, you know, powerbomb this guy through the ring, and the monster's gonna do it, and then they'll come back, you know, and it's like, it just made sense, it just worked.
Oh,
right.
Definitely,
I mean,
believable.
Right,
and then,
totally bought, like, Harley Race, like, would have no problem, like, slapping Vader right across the face if he ever got too full of himself.
Right, yeah. And he's actually had to do that.
Right. Unfortunately, around this time, there's a little bit of controversy, because it's going to be Vader, Ron Simmons, and well-known former racist, maybe still is, the Cowboy Bill Watts, gives Harley Race a line, basically calling Ron Simmons a boy, and it might not translate to Northerners like us, but that was one of the milder derogatory terms for black people in the South.
Right.
So there was a little bit of time, and this is about the time that WCW was very, very sensitive to, almost to, like, people talk about PC culture being terrible now, but like WCW, they were calling foreign objects international objects, like, not as a joke.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So this is really dangerous. Like, this could have been really, really, like, he could have, luckily it didn't fall on Race, it fell on Watts, like it should have, and he made it through.
Right.
If that happened now.
Right,
yeah.
If that happened now, yeah, the shit would hit the fan.
And you can say what you want about it, but, like, you know, I'll give you a great example. You know, you can do a lot. Darth Vader was a great villain. I don't remember him making any racist comments. So there's a lot of things you can do other than causing racial strife to get over as a heel.
Yep. Yeah. I mean,
right.
It's been used before that and after that, but it's still not tasteful.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Right about now, Rick Foley shows up and Steve Austin, Harley Race kind of becomes a mentor to these guys.
Right. Well, Harley Race was actually, like, Steve Austin was under the impression that Harley Race was going to be his manager, right?
Yes. Which would have been, like, I got mixed feelings about that because, like, on the one hand, it would have been great. It would have worked. But on the other hand, would that have stifled the creativity of Stone Cold Steve Austin? Like, he wouldn't have had the time to lead, he wouldn't have left, and he wouldn't have gone on to the ECW and fleshed out that character.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Because with Harley, it would have been totally over. Right.
And the time, Stunning Steve Austin was more of a chicken shit heel, and he would eventually become the badass we know and love today, but the time Stunning Steve Austin was more of a Ric Flair-ish type of heel. So having Harley Race was, I mean, we can all agree, better next to like a badass like Vader, you know, so I don't know if it would have worked as well.
I think it would have worked. I just think it may have, looking at it now, it may have been better for him not to have done it because he would have never, I think at the very least, he would have delayed becoming Stone Cold a lot longer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and,
definitely.
And Vader, or go ahead, Daniel.
Well, definitely, because he wouldn't have been as pissed off probably about leaving, and if they would have gave him Harley Race as a manager, because that means they have a little more faith in him than they showed. So definitely would have delayed him, the whole thing with him getting fired and everything.
Right. And the thing is like with Vader, Race, I think, needed only to manage one guy, and there was, I mean, obviously he had other guys with him too, but Vader was his main focus. Because Vader was the top guy, and Vader's matches were fantastic, I think. And he doesn't get a lot of credit, I think, or WCW doesn't get a lot of credit for 93 and 94 for Vader's matches, because, you know, business
right.
was so bad then. But, you know, and the one match in that year that was my favorite, well, there's two of them that I really like, but the match that was my favorite was the Texas Death Match from the 93 Halloween Havoc. It was Vader and Cactus.
Now, that's the pay-per-view one. That's not the one where he powerbombs Cactus on the floor, right? That was a different one.
No, that was the pay per view. That was 6 months after the power bomb and the amnesia angle.
Okay.
But it was, and you know, it was Vader. You know, Vader got the win because Harley Race hit, you know, Cactus with a cattle prod. But then, you know, Harley, because Harley was still taking bumps at the time too, so Harley was getting his ass kicked. He wasn't selling it a lot. Like, he was getting his ass kicked by these guys, but he was still coming out and he was helping Vader and all that. And what I remember that I found very funny is the fact that the next month at that Battle Bowl pay-per-view, Cactus and Vader teamed together in the very first match, and Harley Race, as soon as he saw that, and I know he was just acting because it was on camera, he goes, "Vader, please, you have to get along with him." Vader threw Rip Rogers halfway across the room.
And the dynamic there was so awesome because then, of course, Cactus and Vader start fighting. Harley Race gets in the middle of it, and then Vader punches Race. Race gets up and starts, like, putting his fist up, and it's just a big, big clusterfuck. But it was awesome.
Of course. I think, you know, I think, unfortunately, this is kind of the end of his career in any big way. And, you know, I'm running out of things to add, but I'm gonna just finish with two interesting things here.
Okay.
Three interesting things I liked. So after this, the one thing that Harley Race did, and it's so funny watching this now, because it was like, you know, nobody, it was so goofy. He was one of the mysterious masked wrestlers on Exposed, Pro Wrestling's Greatest Secrets.
Really?
Remember that? Yes.
Yeah, I remember the show.
And I remember even then I knew it was Harley Race. I'm like, that's Harley Race. I know it's Harley Race. And it was just about what was so terrible. But that was it. Then he wrote a really good book. It's called The Pro Wrestler's Professional Wrestler's Workout Instructional Guide. Him, Ricky Steamboat, and Les Thatcher. And it's just, if you're considering getting in there into wrestling, it's a good place to start because there's a ton of stuff in there you can do without a ring and without anybody with you to get you prepared for the Korean wrestling. And the final thing I'll say is, this should just sum up Harley Race in all his forms. It's a story about how he told Mick Foley to deal with if he ever got pulled over on driving to a venue. Harley Race's advice was, in addition to drinking and driving at top speed, Harley Race said, if the cop pulls you over, before the cop comes up to the car, you take out a blade and you juice yourself. And then when he comes to the car, you start screaming and telling him you're bleeding and you have to get to a hospital. And with that, thank you for having me on the show, guys. I'll let you boys continue. Like I said, I really got nothing else to say. I'm so happy. If you'll have me back, I'll be back.
We are going to try to have something, I believe, for next week. We've already got a poll up on Twitter. And it's going to be, we're either going to be doing Roddy Piper, Kerry Von Erich, Owen Hart, or Rick Rude.
Okay, well, you let me know, guys, and I'll be there. It was a pleasure. All you guys, nice to meet you, Eric. Nice to talk to you guys,
yep.
Doug, Daniel. And
cool. Right.
Have a good night, guys.
All right, you too.
Good to have you on.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, so basically, like, as far as Harley Race goes, I mean, because there's, I'm sure, a lot more we could say.
about the man. Eric, I know you're not familiar with his career.
Yeah, I tried.
But you're not familiar with his career, but, you know, you go through and you watch some stuff, and you'll get very familiar with his career. I mean,
yep. You should do some watching along, so.
Yeah, and but again, I'll say this. I said it earlier. I put the match over heavily. King Haku versus Harley Race from the 1989 Royal Rumble may not have been Harley's best match, but it sure as hell was underrated and underappreciated. And I'll say this again. Harley got Vader over.
Is this closing comments, basically?
Yeah, unless somebody has something else to add.
Which one?
No, I'm fine with closing soon. Just making sure. All
right.
Oh,
I don't know. Eric, you got anything?
I was going to ask you guys maybe your top three matches of Harley Race.
Okay.
Then we can close it out.
Daniel, do you have three?
I do have three.
All right, go ahead.
I mean, obviously, Flair for the gold.
Okay.
Harley Race versus Ric Flair.
Dark Age.
You can really pick any Race and Dusty match for the NWA title. And I would also go, there's a Lucy, it's Harley Race versus Don Morocco. It's from 74. Try to find it, because it really is a clinic. And it's somewhere, it's definitely on YouTube. So I would definitely, so that would be my top three. Him versus Don Morocco, they put on an amazing match. And yeah.
All right, so mine would be Harley Race. I obviously got to go Flair for the gold. Harley Race and Flair from Starcade. Harley Race versus Bob Backlund in that match that used to be on the network where they went to the hour draw. Because even though there was no clear-cut winner, it was still a great match. And then I would also have to say, because I keep putting it over, Harley Race, King Haku from the 1989 Royal Rumble.
And the Dusty Harley match I was talking about was from 1979.
Okay.
My closing comments about Harley Race, if I were to say one last couple of things, which RIP, of course, great loss in wrestling. And Harley Race is old school wrestling. If you're a fan of old school wrestling, if you love old school wrestling and you haven't heard of Harley Race, you got to look him up. You got to do your research, because Harley Race is old school wrestling. We kept talking about how we brought Ric Flair to a new light, brought Dusty Rhodes to a new light. Harley Race, he represents the old way in wrestling, and we wouldn't have the new way without the old way. So we got to forever be thankful for Harley Race.
Right. And I'll say this lastly about Harley Race, and then I kind of want to get into the poll that we have up on the Philly Sports podcast Twitter page to talk about who we're going to do the next career retrospective on. But as
right.
far as Harley goes, huh?
Yeah, okay. No, go ahead.
Okay. All right. As far as Harley Race goes, Harley Race was a good businessman when he needed to do business. He was also a guy that you were not going to force to do business. When he liked you, he liked you. If he hated you, you're a poor bastard. Okay, Harley Race is a guy that helped get some guys over. Obviously, you know, we talked briefly earlier on about what he did for the Von Erichs, what he did as a manager for Vader, and how he got Vader over. And to be honest with you, if he had not had to leave the wrestling business in 1995 due to his car accident, Vader may not have left WCW. Because Harley Race was the one guy that can get Vader to get his head out of his ass. And say, hey, Leon, look, you have to do this. So Vader might not have had that disastrous run in the WWF from 96 to 98 had Harley Race didn't have to retire.
That's another one. Because
there's a whole bunch of them, Eric. Luckily, we're not going anywhere anytime soon. Unless we get fired. But, like, if Harley would have been around, if he would not have had the accident in 95, Harley would have bought Vader, you know, at least another year. You know, Vader, you know, who knows what else Vader could have accomplished in WCW around that time. Who knows what would have happened with Vader, you know, if Vader would have been around, you know, and on Nitro.
During the NWO.
Right. And there may have not even been an NWO. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs.
Man.
I mean, yeah, he could have been, yeah. And then, but Harley Race was, you know, somebody that I think a lot of people can look up to. I mean, you look at current wrestlers today, Tommaso Ciampa was trained by Harley Race, I believe.
Wow.
So Harley Race meant a lot of things to a lot of people. And he meant a lot of things to wrestling fans, especially the fans that grew up watching him. So, you know, obviously rest in peace to him. He is somebody, and, you know, even 76 years old, I mean, it was reported months ago that he had terminal lung cancer and he still survived, another few months. So he's going to be missed, I believe, by a lot of people. I hope WWE does something for him tomorrow night on Raw, at least like a little tribute graphic or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was, you know, it's great to pay tribute to guys like this because they definitely deserve it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, switching gears here. Now, I don't know exactly when we're going to do this. I know it's going to be sometime next week. I don't know if we want to do it next Sunday. Eric, how much time do I have?
I think you still have half an hour.
All right, so I got a little bit of time to yap about this?
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if we're going to do it next Sunday or not, because next Sunday is SummerSlam.
Oh, that's right. Shit.
Yeah.
We can't do it next Saturday.
Right, yeah. Next Saturday we have, you know, prior commitments with football.
Yep. Daniel, you're joining us for that?
Perhaps.
Okay. We may have to do it. Monday I can't do it. I think I'm doing the podcast then. So.
All right. Well, we'd have to do it either You want to shoot for this Friday? We'll do Unscripted Wrestling on Friday.
You can either do it Friday or before SummerSlam on Sunday. What time do you work till?
Next Sunday, I work till 3.
Okay. I don't know if you want to do it after you.
We'll figure it out. The poll's going to be up for another 4 days. So 4 days from today would actually be
Friday,
Thursday.
I said it for Friday at midnight, I think.
Okay. So we'll know by Friday at midnight what we're gonna do, and then we'll advertise it or whatever. You know, for a little bit. We might even just do it either Friday, or we can even do it Sunday before SummerSlam.
Okay. Probably like 5 o'clock.
We'll see. You and I will talk about that.
Absolutely.
All right. But getting back to this, we're going to do another career retrospective because I really do enjoy doing these things, as does, and I don't really mean to speak for him, but I think I'm going to anyway, as does my baby brother.
Yep.
All right.
Who the fuck is that?
That would be you.
Oh, yeah. I do like those.
Okay. And I know Kenny would enjoy coming and doing this because Kenny is quite the history buff.
Yep, just like you.
All right. Yeah, you know, that's why we're family.
I enjoyed it. You two going back and forth, though.
Yeah. This used to just be normal conversations between him and I. At family parties.
Nice.
All right, but anyway, so kind of getting back to business here. The poll, it's up on Eric. It's on the Philly
SP
podcast.
Yep, I see if there's any live results.
All right, so the Philly SP something, right?
Yeah, Philly SP podcast.
All right,
right
the
now,
Philly SP podcast, that's the Twitter handle. What are the results right now? Actually, first of all, before we do that, your poll options for a career retrospective are Ravishing Rick Rude, Kerry Von Erich, Owen Hart, and Rowdy Roddy Piper. Eric, what do we have right now?
We have a three-way tie for 15%, and Roddy Piper has 55% and 13 votes, and 48
wow.
and 12 hours left.
Okay. All right. So basically, I want to go through briefly, you know, what we're going to, what at least I'm going to be bringing up and what we're going to be talking about with each one of these guys. Each one of these guys has a legendary career. Unfortunately, none of them are with us. You know, if Ravishing Rick Rude gets picked, we're probably going to spend quite a bit of time on, you know, his most famous run, which was WCW. You know, WCW, you know, obviously the earlier WWF days, his days in Texas and World Class, and the fact that he actually started in wrestling, like he was also at one time, he was a jobber in the Mid-South territory. So we're going to go through all that. There's going to be a lot to get through with him. You know, if Owen Hart is picked, obviously, talk about his career, his beginnings in the Hart Dungeon.
Yep.
In
WWE.
You know, obviously, the feud with Brett. I don't know if we're necessarily going to get to, you know, the end of his life or not. I don't know. That's probably a touchy subject.
Yeah, we'll figure it out if it comes to that.
All right. If Kerry Von Erich gets picked, there's a lot to get through there. You know, obviously, you know, his family history.
Oh, yeah.
And his son. No, not his son. Kerry Von Erich, no, his brothers.
Oh, no, we're talking about in MOW right now.
Oh, no, those are his nephews.
Oh, okay.
But we're going to talk a lot about the family history and the tragic family history, and that's probably going to be a tearjerker for a lot of people. If Roddy Piper gets picked, there's going to be a lot to get through there. You know, obviously, talk about his humble beginnings.
and, you know, his legendary feud with Hogan and how that helped shape WrestleMania and, you know, a lot of the, you know, the longevity of his career. And to be honest with you, that's going to be a very emotional episode for me because I'm a huge Piper fan.
And then his
WCW
run.
What?
Or somewhat WCW run.
His WCW run. So, well, Daniel, let me ask you this. Who do you want to win the poll?
Owen Hart.
Okay.
I want Kerry. I want to know more about him.
You want to know more about Kerry Von Erich because you really don't know a lot about Kerry Von Erich, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I want to do more about the people I don't know so I can learn more.
Next week's show is going to be emotional no matter which way we go because at least all four of them ended tragedy. So bring your tissues, boys.
Yeah, we're going to need our tissues, and anybody that decides to help us out, you know, with the show next week, you know, it's going to be it's going to be something. It's going to be emotional. There's going to be a lot of emotions riding high, whether we do it, you know, on Friday or whether we might as well actually just do it Sunday before SummerSlam to give us, you know, time to prepare.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're already going to be crying about how shitty the card is.
Yeah. So if we do it Sunday before SummerSlam, you know, we could probably distract ourselves from actually having to watch SummerSlam.
Yeah. I mean,
so
you guys can have
and,
it on.
And that way, like,
your show.
Yeah. I mean, and then, like, if we do it then obviously if the poll ends Friday at midnight, we need time to get some notes together.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch some matches.
Yeah. I mean, and you're going to need, depending on who wins the poll, you're going to need time to go out and buy notebooks so you could write down all the notes we're going to give you during the show.
Oh, boy. Three of the four, I think I know more about. I mean, obviously, Piper and Owen. Rick Rude, I know a little bit. And
right. Well, Kerry Von Erich Kerry Von Erich died in 1993.
Okay, so, yeah.
So, yeah, he died in 1993, so therefore, you didn't even start watching till what, 95 or
98?
95. 95-ish. Okay. So, he was already gone, but...
All right, I think we're pretty much almost good here, right?
Yeah, we're basically just kind of rambling on like a cast of the View. So
we can still go on.
All right. Well, but anyway.
Unscripted reference.
Yeah, no. So basically, those are your poll options for next week. We don't need to keep rambling on about them. Vote on whichever one you would like us to cover. I'll put it to you like this. If you want to hear us cry like a couple of girls, then we told you which one to vote for. But if you want, you know, if you don't want us to act, you know, like we're teenage girls that just got dumped the night before prom, we told you which ones to vote for.
That's happened to me, asshole.
I forgot about that.
But, it should be a good show either way.
All right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so go vote on the poll. Thank you for joining us tonight. This was fun. Thank you again, Kenny, for helping us out. You know, always a pleasure, and we hope you can join us again next week. And
thank you guys.
That's all I got, guys. You're welcome.
Thank you. Yep.
Good here.
I'm gonna end. I have a little clip from a promo for Harley Race to end the show. So,
all right,
that
cool.
will finish the show up. Thank you guys, and thank you everybody. We'll see you next time. We'll see you next Saturday for the NFL continuation. We're doing the NFC and AFC West, and then next Sunday is the
whatever wins the poll.
Yep. Thank you guys. Have a good night.
Yes, sir, you too.
Here we go. All
right.
Yep, here we go. Here's the promo.
Here, right here, is symbolic of what it's all about. This is the world's heavyweight title. And when I say this, I mean it in all sincerity. The world's heavyweight title, held by Harley Race. Not once, but twice. Over half of my life devoted to what I do better than any other human being in wrestling. I am not going to allow any human being to insult me or this. And when I say that, I mean it in dead sincerity. When I walk in that ring, I'm walking in there as world's heavyweight champion. I'm walking in there to defend what I hold probably more close than any other man has ever held. This is my life.